Hello, it's the year 2024. It's me, Matt Stewart, and we've sold out all four of our Do Go Ons live at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. But if you want to see me, you can do that. The show's called Dry Dryer, and we're at a new venue now. It's called The Grace Darling. Me and Sarenjaya Marnett, it's so much fun. The show's getting real good, I reckon. It's been heaps of fun, so we'd love to see you there. Use the discount code Do Go On for cheaper tickets. Also, we've now got the Do Go On quiz show. It's up online on the Stupid Old channel, so please check it out. Getting some lovely feedback so far. Please give it a watch, subscribe to the channel, maybe even comment on it, and, you know, feed those algorithm gods if you can. But love to see a Dry Dryer in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane. Check out the quiz show. Anyway, let's get on with this show.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to another episode of Do Go On. My name is David Warnicki, and as always, I'm here with Jess Perkins and Matt Stewart.
Hi, I'm Matt. Sorry, I was trying to do Dave's breathe in, which is pretty good.
I'm Jess, and I did that last week, and I got nothing for it. Nothing!
I'm sorry, Jess.
What did you want,
money?
You've
been holding on to that all week. Good on you, mate.
Nah, good on you, mate.
For listeners, Dave actually starts every episode underwater, and Just as we press record,
we let him out. He comes
out. He's been underwater all week, so that's what that big gasp of air is.
What I actually do is I don't do that. I don't do the breathe in or the breathe out. I did that on week one, and I just sample it every week.
Right.
Set it in so.
So how do you breathe underwater? It's just gills.
Old gills.
Old gills.
Old gills.
I need this one. Need this oxygen. So the way this show works, so we need to tell people about things. We've got a few things coming up. They'll be linked in the show notes. We're going to do a few. We've got some live Brendan Fraser films, including The Mummy. We've got a live podcast at the Palais, the world famous in Melbourne, Palais. Beautiful old theatre, which we're going to be performing next to in November. And details for all that are in the show notes. Would be so good to have you along. And I'll be doing a show in Perth not too long from now, a bit of stand-up. If you're over there, you can check out dogoonpod.com for the Do Go On shows and mattstewartcomedy.com for
the Matt Stewart shows.
Yeah. Mm. Now that makes sense. I needed a jingle to remember which is which.
Do Go On for the Do Go On shows and Matt Stewart talk up for the Matt Stewart shows.
That's great.
That's great, yeah.
Except you got Matt's website a little bit wrong there, but still, who
Imagine
cares?
Imagine if I got mattstewart.com. Imagine.
I'm sorry. That was a first draft, and I think it was actually pretty fucking cute.
We're going to workshop it.
Of course you are. Of course you are.
Dave, get back in the water. Jess and I have to talk.
We send Dave to his room, but his room is a kiddie pool.
Face down.
Oh, I love summer. I hate winter.
Dave, get back out and explain this show for new listeners.
Okay, so what we do here is we take it in turns to report on a topic usually suggested by a listener. Go away, do a bit of research, bring it back to the others who have no idea what the topic is going to be. It's a surprise every time. Mm. And to get us onto topic, it's Jess's turn to report, so she's going to ask a question. Have you written a question?
Yes. Question is, which family who shared their name with a stone fruit, were a vaudeville sensation of the late 1800s.
The apricots.
Peach family.
Nope.
The nectarines.
Nope.
The Adams family.
Mm-mm.
The avocados.
Smaller.
The plums.
Smaller.
Oh.
Smaller. Lychees. No, they're not nuts. They're the opposite. Are they?
None
I don't
of
know.
It's the stone fruit.
Stone. They're not stones. Have any of the things I've said been stone fruit?
Yeah.
And I've said apricot. Smaller than an apricot.
Mm-hmm.
Bloody hell. I didn't know that. What is this, nanotechnology?
Think of one like a little, on a little stalk.
Grapefruit.
No.
Grape.
No.
Grape. Just grape.
No. Oh, similar to a grape.
Cherry.
Cherry!
Cherries are stone fruits.
Yeah, I had to Google it. They are a stone
bloody
fruit.
Hell.
Wow, we've learned a lot here today.
Yeah. Learned a lot already.
It's about all we've got time for.
Thank you so much for joining us.
The Cherry family.
The Cherry family, yes.
Great name.
More specifically, the Cherry sisters.
Okay, that's a great name.
This has been suggested by Sophie, and it's a pretty fun story. So, in the mid to late 1800s, the Cherry family lived on a farm in Marion, Iowa. Thomas and Laura Cherry had 8 children, 6 of whom survived infancy. Their names were Ella, Lizzie, Addie, Effie, and Jesse, and their brother Nathan.
Poor old Nathan.
And they were raised on a farm in Linn County. Their mother Laura died in 1875, leaving the kids in the care of their father. And all the family, the whole family, dad and all the kids, tended to the 40-acre farm. Big farm. They were quite a poor family, but Thomas told his children stories of how they were descendants of English nobility. I think the sisters accepted this story because, as writer Jack L. High writes, and he has an amazing story that I will draw from a lot, he writes, "These poorly dressed, barefoot and socially awkward sisters needed an ego boost, and they accepted their father's family embroidery." It's kind of nice.
That's nice.
That's nice. I mean, can we all order an ego boost when we need one?
Yeah. Do you want one?
Yes.
Dave, you are so great.
Thank you.
How do you feel?
Like, about the same.
I wish we took a photo before and after.
Yeah, that would have been better, actually.
He looked exactly the same.
Do you want to give it a go? Because I didn't do a very good job, it seems.
Hey, Dave.
Yes?
Your hair no longer looks ridiculous.
Well, thank you. Delayed gratification there.
I mean, it's about 10 years since it did, but I still thank God every time I say it. Thank God.
That I don't have that hair anymore.
It's such a weird thing that it's all.
It makes you feel physically sick.
No, you've always had great hair, Dave.
No, don't lie to me.
I was sick because I was jealous.
Dave.
That beautiful, flowing mane.
Thank you.
You are probably a descendant of someone who did something pretty impressive.
Now you're talking.
And
yeah, German. What are some big things Germans did in the past?
Ooh. Some big inventions, surely, out of Germany. I think the printing press came out of Germany, didn't it?
The Luftwaffe? Is that them? I don't even know what that means.
The US
is that a blimp?
That's the Air Force.
Okay.
Is that them then? You didn't answer the question.
Sounds like
is that
a dessert. I'll have one double scoop Luftwaffe.
Luftwaffe to go.
Yeah, I'll have the Luftwaffles, please.
Oh, damn it, now I want sweets. Their father, Thomas, died in 1888 when Jesse, the youngest, was 17. Nathan, having gone off to work in Chicago, never returned.
Oh, ooh. Too windy.
Yeah. It was like, I cannot get out of this city. Every time I try, the wind just blows me back inside. I'm thinking, bloody hell.
Imagine living in a city where the wind blows you. I guess that's probably most cities.
Yeah.
But it blows you back into your own house.
Yeah. You can't. You are, like, trapped by the wind.
Yeah.
You are a prisoner of the wind.
Wow. Wind prison.
Whoa.
I didn't know about that. So that's when they call it the Windy City. It's sort of like, it's like a police town.
Yeah.
It's like a cry for help.
Yeah. And the wind cries, get back inside.
That's how wind sounds.
So Nathan never came back.
Nah, he, well, there's like a couple of
go home. Hey, you know, there's all these horror movies lately. There's like that one where there's no sound.
Mm-hmm.
And there was that one with birds. That one's a bit further ago.
Yeah.
But maybe Maybe this one is where the wind is the baddie.
Oh.
I'm a kill you. Ooh. And Adam Sandler plays the wind. Ooh, you've got to get a key. It's not a very good Adam Sandler, is it? Shant man. But it's wind man.
Okay.
The wind man.
But how do you escape the wind?
You can't.
Whoa.
You shoot, people try and shoot guns at it.
Shooting each other.
Yeah.
In the end, really, aren't they? Because you shoot through wind.
Yeah, that's how it ends.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yep, yep, yep.
Oh, okay. Thanks for spoilers. Now I don't have to see that movie that I didn't want to see anyway because I'm scared. So, thanks. Yeah, Nathan, he didn't come back. There was sort of like, the way it's written in a few places is that he disappeared. Others were sort of like, he was kind of like, I don't want to work on this farm. I don't want to just live in poverty. Peace out. So whichever way it was, he didn't come back. So Effie wrote later that he had left his sisters orphans to battle our way through life alone. So the sisters banded together. They scraped by on what they could make from the farm's dairy output, and they made a pact to stick together. They would never marry or do anything to threaten their sisterly bond.
Yeah, right.
Like, this is, it's just us against the world.
Nathan was the brother, though, so he didn't really leave them orphaned.
Orphans to battle our way through life alone. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So they were like...
I mean, he's also an orphan, yeah.
They held it against him that he didn't come back.
Yeah, yeah. That he should have probably stuck with them or, yeah. So, yeah, they're sticking together. Reading a description of them sounds a bit like putting a group of superheroes together, except their skills are really... I mean, much less full on. So it's like, this is how it was written. It was like, Ella, the eldest, was fond of physical work, small and stout. Lizzie, the next oldest, was taller, blonde, and a skilled painter. Addie, brown-haired and mathematically adept.
Brown-haired. Yeah. That's pretty super.
She's brown-haired. Effie, the musician of the family and the tallest, was often told she had an apple blossom complexion with dark brown hair and mild blue eyes, she wrote of herself.
What kind of blue? Mild?
Mild. Just a mild blue.
A lot of their names seem like they just got them out of the alphabet. There's Addie. Well, that's not really a letter. Effie. What was the first one? Ella. Ella.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it Emma?
Is there a Zeddy?
There's no, sadly, there is no Zeddy.
Gigi?
The baby of the family was Jessie, the delicate and babied beauty of the family in both face and soul.
Oh. So she has no skills.
No skills, but she's gorgeous. Yeah, and wow. Everybody just does stuff for
your
her
job,
she's the baby.
Look hot.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think you said hot. Like a baby.
Well, she's going to grow up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Babies grow up, Matt.
What? Sorry, Matt.
Oh, my God. Why do we have to keep explaining this to you?
When have you ever seen
adults
a baby grow up?
Adults are babies once.
Have you ever seen a big baby? I haven't.
Yeah. I've never seen a big baby.
Okay, so what happens to babies?
I assume, you know, they... you don't know.
You don't know where babies come from? Don't know where they go?
They get taken back away by those big birds.
So they just drop them here for a bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
To look after them until they're big babies, and then they go back to baby town.
Ah. And then they just live as babies in baby town.
Yeah, well, big babies.
And what's a big baby?
A baby that's much like a really big baby.
Uh-huh.
So, they're just babies that are big.
How many?
I can't put that any simpler.
How many months or years would a baby have to live to be a big baby?
Well, after two, they become big.
Okay.
They go through their... Babies have a growth spurt in their... 2 to 4 period.
Right.
I thought you went to school.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm just asking questions. I mean, the whole point of this podcast is to learn.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to do so. True. And I feel like this should be a safe place for me to ask questions about big babies.
Sorry. Yeah. That's how it goes.
You know, they didn't teach us that in Catholic school. Okay. We didn't learn about big babies.
Oh, yeah. They wouldn't want you to know about that in Catholic school.
They let us know about big babies in Catholic school.
Yeah.
So I didn't know.
So how old is this big baby now, in this period?
Well, Jessie was the youngest, and when her dad died, she was 17.
Oh, thank goodness.
So they were all, like, young women.
So at 17, she's quite a big baby. Good.
She's a massive baby. You could almost say she's, like, she's probably, like, a young, like, adult.
I'm not a baby.
I would say.
Not yet a big baby.
All I need is time.
That awkward period.
That awkward period between baby and big baby.
I hate that. You're sitting at the dinner table and you can't understand what the big babies are talking about, but the babies.
You don't go to the baby table.
Yeah. No. It's like, you're stuck in between.
Sort of just standing up to eat. Difficult.
It's just awful. I do feel for them. So they did what they could to get by. By the early 1890s, Ella was managing the farm and its six cows on her own, while Addie was working in a friend's boarding house in Marion. Jessie was attending school, and Effie and Lizzie had moved into town to operate a dairy store.
Okay, attending school sounds like that's the kind of school I'd pass with flying colours. Actually, I didn't always attend, but it feels like a low bar. We teach you how to attend.
She's attending school.
You're doing it. You're here, you're learning,
well
you're doing
done.
It. If you're not here, well, that's a shame because you're the ones who need this lesson the most.
One morning in January of 1893, Effie was out doing milk deliveries and stopped by Addie's school to just say g'day. She said, Addie, I've decided. We're going to put on a concert at the Opera House.
It's so crazy in my word.
Addie's like, I don't know. But Effie's like, the people will love it. The Cherry Sisters on stage. It'll be fun.
Is this in the Iowan town?
Yes, in their town.
So they've got an opera house in their town. It's a pretty big town?
I think, it must have been like I don't know. I think it was a fairly small town.
Do they call the Scout Hall the Opera House?
Yeah, it could be. I don't think Sydney Opera House.
Okay.
I think more like any kind of theatre maybe would have been called an opera house at the time. That's a good question. I'm not 100% sure, but they're doing it at an opera house. So Addie was worried about the reaction of some of the people in the town. She thought it might make their lives a little harder if people decided to mock them or dislike them as a result of them putting on a show. It's sort of like being scared of putting yourself out there.
Yes. Tall poppy syndrome's alive and well in Iowa.
Bloody hell. But Effie had a reply locked and loaded. It's like she was ready for this.
Shut the fuck up.
I said so. And she starts punching her. Giving her
any more questions?
What's it called? The horse bite on your knee? Is that what it's called?
Yeah,
does that
yeah.
have another name as well? Or just is it called the horse
bite?
Know,
the horse bite.
Yeah. Wow, my brother was so good at those.
It's a good one, the horse
back of the car, I could get every time and I could never do it. My little hands, my little delicate hands.
The other one that was big in primary school was the elephant fuck.
What's that?
I've never heard of that.
Someone would sort of knee you in the butt.
Oh.
Elephant fuck. Maybe that was just specific to our school.
Why was it called elephant fuck, though?
I think because the elephants, I guess, have a real big dick. It's like a size of a leg or a knee.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sure.
That was thinking back, that was just one guy, and he only did it to me.
Oh.
And was it your brother?
It was a real specific tradition in our house. Elephant fuck.
And do you yell elephant fuck whilst doing it?
Yeah, he'd say it as he did it.
So is this primary school, high school?
Primary school.
Oh, wow. Elephant saying elephant fuck in primary school too.
Sounds like we need to call the principal.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, all good fun, guys.
No, you were bullied.
Everyone's going, are you all right, man? No, we're equally having fun.
I'm only crying because I'm laughing so hard. Yeah.
Nah, he got me real good. I have to go to the bathroom. Unrelated. Anyway, that's not what Effie said. Effie did not elephant fuck her.
Well, what was her response? Locked and loaded.
She said, it doesn't bother me in the least, Daddy. I'm not afraid of them. That's what she said. She's like, I don't give a shit.
I don't give a shit if that whole town elephant fucks us.
Let them form a line to elephant fuck us.
Elephant fuck. Honestly, you've never heard of that. Never heard of that concept, man.
I'm sure I did it because I can imagine the feeling.
Yeah.
I can, so I know it's happened, but it was never called an elephant fuck. So that's very funny. So they quickly put together a show, naming it Something Good, Something Sad.
Oh.
Okay.
And selling tickets at the local drugstore with a hand-painted sign that read, lovely costumes, rare and sweet music, laughter by the yard.
Okay.
Bit of fun.
What's the sad bit? Why are you hamming that up?
Maybe it's like a play on something good, something bad. Something good, something sad.
It's like that phrase, bad. That's what our show is.
And you're not like the... The counterpoint to sad is good. They're not really selling themselves there, are they? Good. Something good.
Something good.
Something okay.
Yeah.
Something that'll make you cry.
They're not overpromising.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's all right. I mean, yeah. It's your first show. You don't want to sell yourself to, you don't want to be like the greatest show in the entire universe.
That's true. That's a
you
good
know?
Point.
So maybe like underplay it and exceed expectations. Yeah. Maybe that's the aim here. I don't know. And then only a couple of weeks later, the big night was upon them. January 20th, 1893, an audience gathered to see the show.
And we've had 2 weeks lead up.
Yes.
So that's write the show, rehearse the show, yeah. Promote the show, sell the tickets.
Yep. But also, they've promised, what were the costumes?
Lovely.
Oh, okay. I thought they promised even bigger than that.
No, lovely costumes, rare and sweet music.
Okay.
And laughter by the yard. The biggest promise, I think, is laughter.
Yeah.
By the yard.
Which sort of contradicts the sad part of the title. Mm.
But pathos.
But imagine they said, sadness by the yard.
Yeah.
Come on down.
You can't sell that. There's a crowd coming to see the show. The opener set the tone. Ella performing a self-written ballad called Old Sam Scratch in blackface.
Okay.
Yeah. Jesse was up next playing the harmonica and sang a song called Oh, Why Did They Dig Ma's Grave So Deep, Little Nelly?
Is she trying to break into her mother's tomb?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Why?
Oh, why is it so deep? I just want to get the jewels out of there. Jesus.
Oh, why did they dig Ma's grave so deep, Little Nelly?
Little Nelly.
Yeah, it's so
why
long.
Are you asking Nelly?
Why is this Nelly's problem? Oh, why did they dig Ma's grave so deep, little Nelly? That's funny.
All right, so far, have we had laughter by the yard or the sadness?
Hard to say. Okay. Very hard to say. And I will mention as well, there is no further mention of blackface. So just to let the cringe go. But not great, is it? Not good at all.
Not a good opener.
Not a good start.
Not a good start, no. Throughout the show, the sisters performed a series of skits and musical numbers, poetry, mouth harp playing.
Does that mean they couldn't get a harp?
Or is that harmonica?
Oh.
Yeah, maybe. Or is there a separate thing?
Oh. Yeah, it must be. There's probably a separate thing.
Essay reading, fake hypnosis, and other fake artistic hypnosis. Expressions.
Fake hypnosis. We don't want that. Real hypnosis.
Yeah, none of that. We can't
but if you come
stuff.
Up here and we tell you to do something, you just
you
do
better.
It. And now you're hypnotized.
Oh, cluck, cluck,
a chick. Yes, good. You're way ahead of me.
So are variety shows a big thing at the time, or is this pretty revolutionary?
No, okay. It's big, yeah. And so at the end of the night, they'd made a little over $200, which this is like the late 1800s. That's heaps of money.
Yeah, good on them.
So they made really good money, and they thought, we're onto something here. Are you looking up mouth harp?
Yeah, it's. Heard of Jew's harp?
Mouth.
It's also known as harp, Jew's harp, Vargen, mouth harp, Geugor, Gumbard, Combus, Trump, Ozark harp, Galatian harp, Berimbau de Boca, or Merchunga.
Wow.
It's a lamellophone instrument consisting of a flexible metal or bamboo tongue or reed attached to a frame.
I imagined it as something you sort of, that's more what I was imagining. I was imagining something you have in your mouth and you move your mouth, I think, to
I
change the note and then you press that little thing and it bounces a bit and makes a sound.
It looks like a torture device to me.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you get your nuts in there.
So different to a harmonica. So that is important.
Yeah.
So, they make good money. First show's a success, and they're onto something. So they decide to take the show on the road. The nearest city was Cedar Rapids. But it seems that the sisters had performed mostly to friends and well-wishers in their hometown who maybe had been too generous an audience.
That's right. It's easy to smash opening night at the comedy festival with your family and friends.
Exactly.
There.
Because the city folk of Cedar Rapids hated them.
Whoa. Little Nelly, come on.
They hated them. The crowd threw cigars, food, and anything else they could get their hands on as the sisters sang and bowed from the stage.
Oof. All I've got is money. I'll peg them with it.
That's heartbreaking. So what? So obviously they weren't good singers.
No.
You hadn't mentioned that yet.
I know. And literally, I knew that this would be your reaction, so my next sentence covers this.
Okay.
The elevator pitch of this story made me laugh. A group of sisters travel around doing a terrible show. Okay. But then in reading more about them, I felt a bit bad and I didn't want to mock them. But one part of a really great story about them really turned it around for me. And so, again, it's from Jack L. High. He says, no reasonable person could see the audience respond as could see the audience response as adulation. The Cherries were taunting the public and performing badly was essential to their formula. So essentially, there's arguments all through it, but pretty much they were in on it.
They were playing the villain, sort
yes.
of. They're like a parody of a show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that sounds funny.
They sort of went, I don't think it started in that way.
Right.
But they kind of went, well, we're doing this show and we're like, and we're getting good audiences and we're making good money and we'll just keep doing it.
This is a classic Tommy Wiseau. Oh, I meant the room to be bad.
Yeah.
It's okay. Terrible. Now a tour of the world showing how bad it is.
So Sophie, who suggested it, her pitch was, it's the original The Room.
Wow.
So that's the tone to look at it with.
Did Sophie have a surname?
No, just said Sophie. So I'm not sure which Sophie it was.
Anonymous.
So, yeah, because I sort of thought the same thing. Originally, I was like, this is so funny. And then I read more about them. And I'm like, they seem quite nice. I don't like just hearing about a group of young women getting stuff thrown at them. But they do very well out of it. So I believe that they were very much in on it. He also writes that after rioters began breaking up furniture, the management darkened the lights and told everyone to leave. As the press portrayed the event, the Cherries misinterpreted this tumult as an eruption of enthusiasm for their talents. But of course the crowd had a different intent and the sisters could not have failed to realise it. So it's the same sort of thing. Like, they're aware of the audience not loving them, but it was sort of the original, it's so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
And so they lent in. Yeah. It's very, very funny.
But the press are writing stuff like, the sisters thought that they were tearing the room apart because they loved it.
Yeah, exactly.
You're tearing the room apart.
So
who is he saying to?
You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
Lisa. You're tearing the room apart, Lisa.
Oh, hi, Mark.
The editor of the Cedar Rapids Gazette said, if some indefiable instinct of modesty could not have warned them that they were acting the part of monkeys, it does seem that the overshoes thrown at them would convey the idea.
Okay.
So people are throwing stuff at them.
Back in the days, they wore undershoes as well.
Mm.
Double shoes.
Or is that what they called socks back then?
Maybe that was the old name for socks.
Yeah,
get your undershoes and your overshoes.
Get your undershoes.
Imagine getting pegged in the face with a sock.
So they got this terrible mean review from the Cedar Rapids Gazette. And they saw it as an opportunity for more publicity and to really milk the attention that they were getting. So
sort of wily.
Yeah.
They're just onto it.
They disputed the Gazette review of their show, claiming it was libel, and agreed to take part in a sham trial in front of an actual judge and in front of an audience the next night. So essentially get a judge down. We'll have this whole courtroom scene play out in front of an audience. We'll charge tickets for it, obviously.
Oh, great. They're marketing geniuses.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there they
imagine being able to get people out for that the next night.
Yeah.
Hey, town, we're doing a show. It's a weird new show where it's a fake court case.
I know
it's
saw
on tomorrow.
You saw us last night and threw stuff at us, but come to the court case.
It'll be fun. It'll be different. So there at that show, they argued that editor Fred Fawkes had written maliciously and he was convicted, in inverted commas, and sentenced to hard labour on the cherry farm, plus an additional penalty of having to marry one of the Cherry sisters.
There's no worse penalty than that.
He's like, I got to pick one.
So he's in on this as well. He's coming to be part of the trial.
Yeah, he came to be part of it. He's not in on the show or he's not really, I don't know, but he agreed to, he's like, if you're going to sue me, then you've got to have to do it like in your show. And so that's what they did. He did not marry any of them.
He didn't.
No.
Didn't they already have a pact where they wouldn't get married?
Yeah, it was, but that wasn't them saying, you got to marry one of us. It was the judge saying, you got to marry one of them, which, I mean, like, that's weird.
I guess it's that he's like, he or she is a regular judge.
Usually, Dave, it's the 1800s. He's a regular judge.
That was my feeling. Anyway.
But thank you.
He or she could be an 1800s judge.
You get the feeling that usually the judge has to follow the letter of the law. But in a fun mock trial, you're like, this is the kind of stuff that I've been wanting to try out in my courtroom.
He's ad-libbing.
Yeah, making up some wacky stuff.
He's like, you got to work on the farm. Yeah. And you got to marry one of them. And
you got to pull your pants down for 3 months.
Yeah, and put your shoes on backwards.
How about that?
You're out of shoes.
Yeah, put your undershoes on backwards.
I don't usually get to say this kind of stuff. The power's gone to my head.
God, it's good to let loose. Yeah. So the Cherry sisters returned home, having made a decent wad of cash over a very short period of time.
A wad's the best kind of amount. Oh,
could not agree, yeah. Could not agree.
Could not agree.
I'm especially, so sorry, I could not agree.
Especially a decent wad.
Yeah, a decent wad.
Oh, made an absolutely decent wad of cash.
How much does that set you back? Well, half a decent wad.
Oh, decent Bunsen burner, this one.
Yeah. After some thought, a couple of months later, they were back out on the road. They were sort of like, do we want to keep doing this? Yeah.
One of the sisters' worry was, we might get ridiculed. 2 nights later, in a new town, people are throwing cigars and socks at you, booing you. And she's like, this is what I warned you about.
She's like, this is exactly what I didn't want to happen.
And they had no real history of performing, apart from one was a musician.
Yeah, one was a painter.
And then the rest, they're just like, all right. Oh, I'm normally a farmer, but I'll have a go.
I'm usually a professional baby, but I guess I could sing a song.
Professional baby.
I've looked up undershoe as well. It's a covering for the foot, sturdier than a sock, worn under the outer shoe. Why were shoes in so many parts? Guys, just figure out shoes.
How many layers were shoes back then?
Anyway.
Yeah, right.
It's like a thick sock.
Right.
So, yeah, they're back out. Heading out on the road, Effie later wrote, "No doubt, dear reader, you will ask why we continued in the entertainment field when we had such heavy odds to contend with," she mused in her memoir. That's a fun sentence too. "The reason," she says, "was simple. We were alone in the world and had our own way to make. Father had left no money at his death, and it was hard work sometimes to make ends meet. And when we saw the crowds we could draw and we knew we gave a very pretty and refined entertainment, why should we let them down us?" So they're kind of like, well, fuck them. If they're going to give us their money and we can make, you know, we can support ourselves on it, well, like, I don't care what they think of us.
Yeah. It's like they're playing the heel in a wrestling match.
Yeah. Yeah.
So only there's no, what's the other, there's no face.
Face. Mm. So off they went, performing around Iowa. In Davenport, a newspaper critic lamented their unutterably rank show.
Rank is so funny.
Unutterably
that
rank.
Is rank.
Unutterably
couldn't
rank.
Possibly utter how rank this show was.
I love the word rank.
Yeah, rank's great.
So good. In Dubuque, management banned the crowd from bringing rocks greater than 2 inches in diameter.
Okay. So, freaking hell.
Guys, come on. Let's not go crazy with the rocks.
So on the way in with security, empty your pockets and they get out the ruler and go, yep, yep. What are you trying to get a small boulder in here, mate? Piss off.
Yeah, get that one out.
Hope they got the chicken wire up. That...
They did.
Yeah, right.
Seriously, they were protected. Did, yeah. Oh, wow.
Blues Brothers style. They
getting
did
hit
have
with
that.
A rock. Like even a 2-inch diameter rock.
Just how funny that sentence starts with, like, they banned the crowd from bringing rocks greater than 2 inches in diameter.
But it's like last week when Dave was telling us about the snooker ball duel.
Yeah.
It'd be the same. You get hit flush in the middle of the head, you'd be dead.
Yeah, hit hard enough. But, you know, just because you can't bring in big rocks doesn't mean you can't bring in turnips, cabbages, and other objects you could throw onto stage.
So they weren't measuring the cabbages.
No, you could bring any size cabbage you want.
Yeah, that'd be great. So they're getting paid. They're also getting all this free food.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're walking around on the stage with a big boiling pot.
Yeah.
Catching it.
We got soup for days. Apparently one time someone sprayed a fire extinguisher at the stage.
Because they were too hot.
Yeah. Just a baffling
This act is on fire.
Take that as a compliment.
There were
sure.
police there and they still did that. It's like, oh. This is from El Hai again, which is a great read. It'll be listed in the show notes. It says, "Thus emerged the Cherry Sisters' routine of giving a performance, seeing good ticket sales, enduring audience misbehaviour, expressing outrage, and returning right back to the stage." So they just kept going.
So they'd give it back to the crowd too.
I'd
be annoyed by it. Oh,
I don't know. I don't think so.
Oh, you just go on with.
But yeah. They'd storm off. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe it was like when he says expressing outrage, it might be like being frustrated behind the scenes.
Yeah, right.
Obviously, but, it's not a nice thing to endure.
But on stage, she's singing, "Why is my mother's grave so deep?"
Little Nelly.
It'd be interesting because any pressure of it being good would be off. So the art would become being bad at it. So you'd sing further off key.
Yeah.
I guess it'd be a fine line. You can't make it too ridiculous.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's hard. That line is actually surprisingly hard. The audience of the time, and like you were saying, was vaudeville, that kind of variety show, big. It was, but it wasn't a particularly refined or cultured audience. They were often hostile and disliked women performers, especially ones who flouted traditional female roles. Very few vaudeville acts found success despite all of these challenges. I should say female vaudeville acts. But the Cherry Sisters were one of the lucky few. For the next 3 years, the sisters toured the Midwest. As word spread, other towns clamoured to get tickets to see for themselves just how bad the Cherry Sisters were. So funny. Reviewers also tried to one-up each other, just writing the worst reviews. In fact, in 1930, Time magazine noted, in every town that the Cherry Sisters played, it was an invariable custom for the editor of the local paper to review their act with a column and a half of humour, satire, parody and biting sarcasm. So it was kind of part of the game, is that reviewers would be over the top mean about their show as well.
Right.
Which I guess in turn then drums up more publicity and popularity for them.
Yeah.
Very strange. The Cedar Rapids Gazette, as we mentioned before, their review said, they were simply awful. At 1 minute, the scene was like the incurable ward in an insane asylum. The next, it was like a camp meeting. Cigars, cigarettes, everything was thrown at them, yet they stood there awkwardly bowing their acknowledgements and singing on.
Imagine getting a cigarette thrown at you.
Whilst bowing.
Did you even notice? Because it was lit. Yeah. Landed in your hair.
If it's like a fresh one, you'd be like, sweet.
Yeah. Fuck with that.
Pick that up. I could use that as currency in prison.
Couldn't have a plan B.
Put that in the old prison pocket.
Prison pocket.
We've all got one.
That sounds like a euphemism for a vagina.
I think it's your ass.
The prison pocket. That's good stuff.
A few years later, in 1896, a man named Willie Hammerstein was managing his father, Oscar Hammerstein's, Olympia Theatre in New York City. The theatre was new but struggling, and Willie had heard of the crowds that the Cherry Sisters were pulling. In an interview, he said, I've been putting on the best talent and it hasn't gone over. I'm going to try the worst. So the Cherries hit Manhattan in November of that year, and the New York Times was there for the momentous occasion. They wrote, it was a little after 10 o'clock when three lank figures and one short and thick walked awkwardly to the centre of the stage. They were all dressed in shapeless red gowns, made by themselves almost surely, and the fat sister carried a bass drum. They stood quietly for a moment, apparently seeing nothing and wondering what the jeering laughter they heard could mean.
The fat sister.
I know. So much of it is just so unnecessary. In their Manhattan debut, Jesse performed a solo rendition of the song Corn Juice.
Corn juice. As delicious as corn juice. Delicious as corn juice, for I'm corn juice. The twist at the end is that they're corn juice.
Oh,
hit in the face with a lit cigarette.
A critic wrote about corn juice, a sentimental song that convulsed the audience.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
Corn juice.
Corn juice. Well, it was probably a delicacy of the time.
Corn juice.
Yeah.
How do you juice corn?
Mush it up. I'd have called it corn milk.
Yuck. Addie and Lizzie crooned an Irish ballad, and Addie read The Mystery of the 19th Century, an essay she wrote.
Oh, that's fun. I like going out and seeing an essay read.
Yeah.
By an amateur writer.
There was also a sung quartet, and a critic wrote, a sad piece, but not as the Cherries did it. The audience roared.
Oh, I laughed at them doing a sad song.
Very confusing. The act climaxed with one of the sisters' signature entertainments, a short play called The Gypsy's Warning, in which Effie played a soothsayer who warns the innocent maiden, played by Lizzie, of the evil intentions of a crude and mustachioed suitor, played by Addie.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether it's your first ever website or your business is expanding, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website and engage with your audience.
Jess, before you jump in, Dave, can you say entrepreneurs again? It sounds so good.
Entrepreneurs.
Oh my God.
God, he's good.
Jeez.
If it feels a bit overwhelming to start your own website, don't worry. You can get help with written content on your website with Squarespace AI. Generating instant, personalized results that know and show your brand identity. You explain what your site's about, you choose your tone, you enter what you need, and you get short and long form text. How cool is that?
Oh my God, can Squarespace just do my life?
It'd be good if it could do my taxes.
Hey, you can easily manage your clients and invoices. Two things that I definitely have, from vetting leads to receiving payment via invoices in one streamlined and customizable workflow.
Sorry, Matt, can you pronounce streamlined for me again?
Streamlined.
Beautiful.
Was that closer?
Yeah, in that it was the word.
Okay.
And not streamlined. You can also sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell membership or courses, or you can sell files that your customers can download, like PDFs, music, ebooks.
Right, Jess, can I just get you to say the word courses again?
Courses.
Nailed it. Head to squarespace.com/dogoon for a free trial and to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/dogoon.
Oh my God.
The Gypsy's Warning soon attained the status of theatre legend. The skit's opening line, "Lady, in that green grave yonder lies the gypsy's only child," became a popular punchline. How?
How is that a punchline?
I don't know. It's so long.
Say it again.
"Lady, in that green grave yonder lies the gypsy's only child."
Yeah, that sounds real sad.
No, Matt, it's a very popular punchline.
Now I get it.
Baffling. It's just this skit they end on, it's like people are coming to the show like, "Do it! Do the line!"
Oh, that's their big closer.
Yeah.
"Gypsy in the grave going under, yeah!
Do it! Yeah, do the Gypsy's Warning!"
She said the thing.
The Times concluded their review by referring to the sisters as four freaks from Iowa and four wretched women. And that it is sincerely to be hoped that nothing like them will ever be seen again. I should have mentioned earlier, much earlier probably, that one of the sisters, Ella, I think, she stopped performing with them.
Yeah, because there was more than the four farm. At some point.
Yeah, yeah, there's five of them. After the first like few shows, she was like, "Yeah, I'm just going to stay at the farm.
My self-esteem is not up for
this." Yeah, like, I don't want to do this. But there's
it's
still
so
four
funny
of them,
that the reviewers didn't cotton on. It's like, it's... You haven't read any other reviews. Mm. Like, this is kind of what it is now. Mm. So there should be some sort of a change and a shift in how you're
in the review. Suddenly, they're like,
seeing it,
not as bad as I hoped. One star.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like beautifully awful or whatever. You know.
Yeah.
Like, it's they've decided not to change. They're not still going out there going, "We'll kill again with this."
Yeah. They're aware of the reviews they're getting, of the audience reactions, and they're still doing it.
It feels like that review, but I guess now there'd be more talk of it between the towns, probably. But you'd think now they'd be like, everyone was going to see this famously awful show, and it did not disappoint.
It was terrible.
Yeah,
exactly. But that's, again, maybe it's sort of like, what we were saying before about the reviewers trying to kind of one-up each other with their terrible, mean reviews. So I think they're like, they're trying to be dicks about it or something. I don't know. It's hard to know.
It is rank beyond words.
Unutterably rank. It's fucked. Apparently, fresh produce was said to be scarce in New York City because of the demand for projectiles.
Wow.
People like rocking up with like full backpacks.
They're ready to go, yeah.
New York was already a pretty big city by then, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Is the Hammersmith, did that go on to be a famous theatre?
Hammerstein. It's not there anymore, but I believe this one, or maybe it was another one that he built shortly afterwards, is like where Times Square is now.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So I was right in the heart of old New York.
So even with all those reviews and fresh produce being just sold out everywhere, the show ran for 6 weeks, drawing in big crowds and saving the theatre from bankruptcy by the 12th day.
Wow.
So in under 2 weeks, they've saved this theatre from... And it's only the theatre had only opened the year before. It was a new theatre. It was struggling. He was probably going to go bankrupt. Under 2 weeks of having the sisters performing, he's in the clear. That's ridiculous.
That's amazing.
And before that, he just had, like you said, world-class talent.
Yeah, he'd been booking the best.
That's a massive hit show.
Yeah, it's huge. They're running for 6 weeks in New York, selling out.
What year did you say this was? Was it 1888 or just after?
This was 1896, sorry.
So in 1890, there was already, pushing up towards 3 million people in New York City. So it was a big place.
Big town, yeah.
And they sold out of fresh produce in a city of 3 million people.
Yeah.
How much produce are they all bringing individually?
Too much.
They're bringing enough. How big is the theatre? A couple of thousand or something?
Like, you'd think the first few shows, people would just be like, all right, what have I got on me to throw?
Yes.
You know? And
Bob
for me,
watch.
Yeah.
Jacket. Top hat.
Ooh, half a pumpkin.
Why do you have that on you?
I take it everywhere I go.
Take my pumpkin
everywhere.
A couple
of cigarettes in my prison pocket.
My pumpkin is my best friend.
I might get hungry. Or lonely.
You're going to funk them hungry. You better believe me.
After New York, the Cherry Sisters began what the New York Times called a triumphant tour of the United States and Canada that lasted for several years.
Whoa! Are they making serious coin for themselves?
Yeah, they're doing very well.
Oh, thank goodness. Nathan's like, God, I wish I could be part of this shit show.
All of a sudden he's rocking up backstage. Hey!
Hey!
Sisters!
I reappeared.
You guys need a manager?
I'm also a terrible actor.
I can suck. they're on the road for several years, but they still had their disputes with critics along the way, of course. In Oatbolt in 1898, the editor of the local paper wrote, "Their long, skinny arms, equipped with talons at the extremities, swung mechanically and soon were waved frantically at the suffering audience. Their mouths opened like caverns and sounds like the wailing of the damned soul."
He accidentally went to the sloth enclosure at the zoo.
Speaking of horror movies.
Yeah.
Sounds like, he's gone accidentally seeing some howler monkeys.
Yeah. With their mouths opened like caverns.
Wow. Oh, he's eating some really strong cheese before bed.
Yeah.
That's a nightmare.
Sounds like wailing of damned souls issued there from. Not a lot of that one actually has anything to do with the show and feels super sexist. So the sisters sued the paper for defamation. As well as another paper.
We don't have talons.
Yeah, I reckon you'd be able to prove that pretty quick. Well, they had them on the night, though. They've gotten rid of them since.
They've trimmed their talons. they sued the paper and another one in Des Moines?
Des Moines, Iowa, where Bill Bryson's from. His first book about America said, "I come from Des Moines, Iowa. Someone has to."
Amazing. God, he was so bitter so early.
He was.
A paper in Des Moines had reprinted the review as well, so they sued both papers. In a landmark case, the Iowa Supreme Court eventually ruled in favour of a newspaper's right to freely criticise public performances, stating the editor of a newspaper has the right, if not the duty, of publishing for the information of the public fair and reasonable comments.
That's right. It's their duty to warn people of your talents.
Yeah. And when you open your mouth, it's like the souls of the damned.
That was a typo. We said you've got long arms with talent at the end. Your fingers are very talented.
Yeah. And it goes on to say, surely, if one makes himself ridiculous in his public performances, he may be ridiculed by those whose duty or right it is to inform the public regarding the character of the performance. Apparently, this case is still frequently held up as a precedent in contemporary court cases.
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's very interesting. Yeah. So,
can I still listen to these Bill Bryson books? There was one anecdote he told and when I was listening last night about how funny English people are. And it was this long run-up. It was paragraphs long about how the trains weren't running and stuff. And then he got on this train and it hadn't gone. It was just sitting there. And he was the only one on there. And this guy with a big bushy beard. So bushy it could fill a mattress, he said.
Oh.
And then he goes, and I asked the man, I said, how long have you been waiting here for? And the guy goes, well, put it this way. When I got here, I was clean shaven. And then he goes, I like that very much. That was it. He's like, English people are so funny. Check out this long story. Well, fun song was worth the payoff.
Yeah, which ends in a very funny way. So.
I mean, not having to go at this bearded man. It's a funny little quip on the train.
Answer the question. How long? 10 minutes? Longer?
But he said it was a decade. He's got this memory. He's carried it around with him for a decade or so.
I think ultimately what you're remembering there, Bill, is just a nice human moment.
Yeah.
You and that guy had a little laugh. It wasn't particularly funny, not probably worth retelling verbatim, but it was a nice moment of connection.
And he was talking, he's like, you know, they just wouldn't understand that kind of irony in America.
Irony.
Or he might have even said anywhere else in the world.
Oh.
Another example he gave was buying a ticket for the bus, he said. And I said, how much is that? He said, can I get a receipt? And the guy goes, well, the ticket's free, but it's $18.50 for the receipt. And he goes, if they said that in America, they would be confused.
So he's not a, like, he's kind of, well, he's wrong, firstly, but also, does he think he's above all Americans because he does get it?
I'm not sure. But I'm like, America's got a fair history of comedy as well.
Yeah.
I know England does as well. But I think both countries get jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I haven't spent that much time in either, so maybe not, but
it's so funny. Oh, you gotta say that anywhere else.
Yeah, like, would not get it.
They wouldn't
Any
get
other
it.
Country in the world would not get that kind of level of comedy.
Would not have a clue.
Maybe, I mean, this was from the mid-90s. Maybe we wouldn't have got it back then. Maybe Americans have only just caught on to comedy.
Yeah.
They did. Yeah, anyway, whatever. I'm still listening. I'm still enjoying it, but there's so much of it. I'm like, Bill,
I don't know how or why you're still listening.
Is it hate listen now?
Yeah.
No, it's not. I fall asleep to it every night.
But the guy reading it, his voice is so irritating.
Mm. Oh, he's very talented, the voice actor, I reckon. Very talented.
Talented how so?
Well, he does a lot of accents. There was one recently a questionable accent. But mainly like American and English accents, he does quite well.
But what you don't know is he is dressed up in costumes of them.
Yeah, he's doing a little play in his soundproof booth somewhere.
It's just audio. Stop it. You don't have to do a costume change.
I can't do the voice without the costume.
I refuse.
Hello, Squire.
Hello.
Took me 30 minutes to get ready for that line.
Now I got a big hat on. Okay, so
he's wearing a big fake beard.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way.
Sorry to our regular listeners who have, over the last few weeks, had to start hearing me talk about Bill Bryson a lot.
I love it. I don't. I hate it. After a few more years of touring and making great money for themselves, by the turn of the century, the taste of theatregoers was changing. Theatre goers. People didn't want vaudeville shows anymore, and they weren't being offered, the sisters weren't being offered theatres in big cities to big audiences anymore. While they were doing shows in Hot Springs, Arkansas in 1903, Jessie, the baby of the family, became quite ill. She'd contracted malaria and typhoid.
Shit.
And passed away at the age of 33.
Oh, shit.
Effie later wrote, "All the joy of our life was gone with the death of our little sister, for she was one of God's most perfect flowers."
Was she the baby?
Yeah, Jessie was the youngest. Without Jessie, the remaining sisters...
Don't know, I mean, it's equally sad for any of them dying. I don't know. Not the baby.
Oh, not the little one. I'm
picturing a real big baby.
Yeah.
33, I know a guy who died at 33.
Not Bill Bryson.
No, another bearded man. But he rose again, much like Bill Bryson. Bill Bryson has written... The books are really... Like, his short history of everything
is a very good book.
How does he bring him up?
I just talked about one of them then. Dying. You're like, the thing about Bill Bryson...
Dave did it that time.
Dying. That's something that Bill Bryson hopefully won't have to do.
He actually said in this book...
That was you that time.
He said he's going to live forever. He did say that. Love you, Bill.
We're going to come in one day. Matt's going to have like a Bill Bryson t-shirt on. Yeah. And it's just going to slowly, he's going to morph into Bill Bryson. And then he's just going to hand us a pamphlet one time to join a Bill Bryson cult.
Yeah, you want to join the... It's a good word of Bill.
Our Lord and Saviour. So without Jessie... Are they down to three now? Yeah, they're down
on the tour.
Maybe they can get the fifth sister back.
No, they decided to stop performing and they returned home. So they'd made really good money in their heyday, up to $600 a week, the equivalent of more than $17,000 in today's money. That's like you know, in their peak. I'm sure it fluctuated, you know.
Yeah, especially the New York run.
Yeah, 6 weeks of that. They're making really good cash.
Great. And did they put any aside?
Yeah. So with their savings, the sisters opened a bakery in Cedar Rapids, specializing in cherry pies.
Oh, great.
Love that.
Warren sang a song about that later on. Is that too old of a song for you guys? It was before you were born. Anyway.
Is that She's My Cherry Pie?
Oh, yeah.
Who was it?
Warren. One hit wonder. Mm.
Where do I know that? I know it from a 90s movie, I think. Could be Wayne's World. Anyway.
Very Wayne's World-y sort of sound. Yeah. I'm loving some of the city names in this story.
Cedar Rapids. Great, so good.
There's a movie, I think, called Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, I thought.
A comedy movie, maybe with Will guy used to be on Saturday Night Live.
Ferrell.
Oh, no, maybe not Will then. He's the last man on earth. I think he's in it.
Will Arnett.
Not Will Arnett. How many funny Wills are there?
He's in Last Man on Earth, isn't he?
Oh, it could be. Who's the main guy, though? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And the other, Hot Springs.
Oh, no, not Will Arnett.
Hot Springs sounds cool as well.
Hot Springs, yeah.
Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Yeah, sign me up.
That is fun.
I want to go there.
Fuck, now who am I thinking of? Doesn't matter.
Will Forte,
thank you. So, yeah, they had their bakery. They lived in Cedar Rapids in a house decorated with they had their family coat of arms. They had souvenirs from their theatre career and a large portrait of Jessie.
It sounds like they fucking nailed it.
Yeah, they did pretty well.
Absolutely. They got in, made a living, sort themselves out for the rest of their life, set themselves up with the bake. Having a bakery in Cedar Rapids just makes me feel happy.
Yeah, it sounds lovely, doesn't it?
Amazing.
Yeah. Effie struggled a little bit with her now relative anonymity, and so she decided to run for mayor of Cedar Rapids.
Oh, I do say,
Miss Mayor.
This is some of her initiatives. Have a think about if you would vote for her as mayor.
Okay.
9 p.m. winter curfew for adults.
No.
Closing public parks to eliminate them as trysting spots for the young.
All right, I'm on board.
Requiring swimmers to use more modest bathing suits.
Mm-hmm.
And the outlawing of profanity on the street.
That makes fucking sense.
I don't like any of those things, I don't think.
You do love a skimpy bathing suit, don't you?
You do love banging in a park.
Well, I think anyone should be able to skimp out if they want. And talking about back in these days, skimpy would have meant showing your ankles.
Ankles, yeah. She's like, I want full-on scuba suits.
I'm drowning under the weight of these board shorts.
I want you to wear over socks in the water.
He was not in that film anyway. After all that, there's not a single Will in the film. Ed Helms, John C. Reilly are the big two. Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, my God.
Anne Hesh.
Oh.
Isaiah Whitlock Jr.
Hmm. There you go.
Fun facts.
It's all good fun. So, yeah, she's run for mayor. and she received 8% of the votes cast.
Okay.
2 years later, she repeated her campaign and snagged less than 5% of the vote.
Less than five.
About half of last time.
But if there was like hundreds of candidates, is that enough to win?
Yeah, no.
Oh.
They did perform a few more times over the years, although with their advancing age, audiences no longer threw vegetables at them.
Oh,
they were older ladies. They're like, okay, we're not going to throw shit at you.
They threw mushy peas.
Chew them down.
Soups.
Throwing ladles of soup at them. Just really fucking flicking it up.
Splat.
I got a whole big pot of it. I could go all day, ladies.
I got like 80, 90 ladles here.
Slap.
That's fun. In a real display of doing a 180, after one appearance in Cedar Rapids, the city's paper, which was not very kind to them many years before, called them distinguished local artists.
Ah, that's nice.
That's nice. They had a brief renaissance in 1934, touring New York, Chicago, and Minneapolis, and a couple of other places as well. And El High said they had hardly changed their act at all, and their costumes now qualified as antiques. They just kept everything the same.
Whoa.
They didn't have that drive to, like, write new. They were just like,
what are the classics?
Let's keep what works.
But that kind of, I mean, that sounds kind of fun. That, like, it's all original stuff for the true fans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah, and yeah, they became sort of popular again. So they did a few more shows. But all good things must come to an end.
No.
Can't be a surprise for people that were alive in the late 1800s.
No, tell me, no.
Ella passed away in 1934 and Lizzie in 1936. Effie, she was Effie and Addie were left, and Effie spent her time writing a play and short novels that bore such titles as The Blacksmith's Daughter and Nobody's Child. They were all fairy tales in which poor and beautiful young women, often described as barefoot and pure of soul, survived abandonment and the petty envy of others before finding a real home and true love, which is very nice. Addie passed away in 1942 and Effie in 1944. Still to this day, the true motivations of the Cherries remains a mystery. I mean, I've done this whole report very much with the tone of like they were in on it, but some people kind of wonder if they intentionally put on horrible performances simply for the money, well aware of their lack of talent, or did they actually think they were good at what they did and the negative reviews were unwarranted? Some have argued that they wouldn't have gone to the effort to sue different people if they weren't taking themselves seriously, but others say that they absolutely knew what they were doing and were in on it the whole time.
Yeah, that could just be seen as extra publicity.
Yeah, exactly.
They did the full fake courtroom thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like they were in on it quick.
Yeah.
And that was after their second show.
Yeah.
A reporter for the Des Moines Register wrote, "Either the Cherry sisters are completely sincere and take themselves seriously, or they are the most accomplished actresses the world has ever known."
Okay. So they probably believed in themselves, according to them.
I choose to believe the latter. They are the most accomplished actresses the world has ever known.
And they took the secret to their grave.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a fun story.
Yeah.
The saddest part of it was the last sister died in 1944 when Fitzroy won their last premiership. She went to her grave thinking Fitzroy are going to be a power forever, and now they don't really even exist as a team anymore.
Wow. I know.
Makes you think.
Doesn't it?
Doesn't it make you think?
Does it?
Oh, bloody hell, doesn't that make it? If that doesn't make you think there's something wrong with you, that's what I always say.
I'd have a brain check if I was you.
But yeah, that is my report on the Cherry Sisters.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm not sure what to call the episode. Cherry Sisters, the worst act of all time. Don't know.
Yeah, something like that's pretty fun.
Mm.
I like to hope that they're in on it.
Yeah, sure. I think it makes it more fun to laugh at.
That was great. Great fun. I mean, when you said blackface, I thought this was going to take a...
I didn't have to mention it. It's probably good that I did. Anyway.
Different time.
Oh, yes, 1800s. It's not okay, but yeah.
Great report, Jess. I love when people suggest a topic like that. Thanks so much to Sophie. And then one of us has a report on it. I had never heard of them. I'm likely to have gone through my entire life without ever hearing about the Cherry Sisters. So, yeah, great report, great suggestion. Don't forget, you can always suggest a topic by going to our website, dogoonpod.com, and anyone can suggest a topic. And, yeah, if you know any sort of obscure stories,
let us know.
Even it might be from your country where it's only known in your part of the world, we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, and, yeah, they're often the best ones. So many of the ones we do have been suggested by dozens of people, but the ones, often the great ones, are only suggested by a solo Sophie, for instance, today. Yeah. And, yeah. I think they're great because they're the kind of stories you just never would, or I mean, we wouldn't. I'm guessing in Iowa they're very well known.
Still huge.
I bet one Bill Bryson knows their story well.
Someone has to.
Fuck, you love Bill Bryson.
Yeah, you got a funny relationship with
Bill.
It's
a real love-hate relationship.
Mostly yeah. Love.
So that brings us to everyone's favourite section of the show, which is where we get to start thanking some of our great Patreon supporters who support us via patreon.com/dogoonpod or dogoonpod.com. And there's all sorts of levels you can support, different prices depending on what you want to do. And depending on the level, you get different rewards. Like right at the lower one, you get to at least vote on topics. So at the moment, they're my topics. So I think my next week will have been voted on by them. Oh, well, pretty much everyone. And then you've got bonus episodes and a Facebook group exclusive to the supporters and a newsletter and
pre-sales for shows we do.
Yeah, you get pre-sales, usually get discounts. We forgot to do that on one recent show, but we regret it and we'll fix that next time.
Yeah, I hope someone got fired for that blunder.
Dave put it up without a discount. People had already bought tickets and then we feel guilty. We can't put a discount on now because then the people who bought the first tickets won't get the discount. That's unfair.
Really threw Dave under the bus too. But he deserves it because it was his fault.
But those people who attend that show will be there with a few dollars. A couple can come up to me. Mm-hmm. Come up to Dave and he'll give you a few coins back.
Yeah, that's right. I carry a lot of coins.
In his prison pocket.
Give me a second. I've got a $2 here somewhere.
Is that I didn't get it at first, but that is that a real term?
Yeah, I've
never heard of the prison pocket as your butt.
Smuggle shit in. Well, not shit, other stuff.
Yeah, the shit you don't put it in there.
But one of the things of all the
you're
rewards,
you're doing it wrong if you're putting the shit
put
in.
Put shit back in.
Don't do that.
Oh, anyway. There's and just in case it's a topic one day, but there was one story I read looking at topics recently where a woman was putting, anyway, so,
bit of
little sizzle there.
I don't think I want to hear that topic.
No, I read it through and I'm like, I won't put that one up for the vote.
I'm going to delete that one from the hat.
So one of the big rewards you can get by supporting us on the Sydney Sheinberg level is the fact, quote, or question section of the show. It has a little jingle that goes like this.
Fact, quote, or question. I'm doing it like the Cherry Sisters have done.
He just got hit in the face with a bit of cabbage. Ow.
He always remembers the cabbage. And... you get to give us a fact, a quote, or a question, and you also get to give yourself a title. This week, just looking ahead, we've got three facts and a quote. So here we go. The first one comes from Jamie Griffiths, who's given himself the title of President of the Perth Do Go On Fan Club.
Oh.
Prestigious title you're holding there, Jamie.
Self-appointed too, which is very
brave. Well, I can only assume there was a vote.
Oh, yeah, and we just weren't notified.
I mean, why would we have been?
Yeah, you're right.
It's not our business.
Hmm.
So Jamie has offered us a fact, and that is, did you know, I reckon Dave might know this.
Okay.
Did you know Michael Caine's real name is Maurice Joseph Micklewhite Jr.?
And you assumed I wouldn't know that. Unfucking believable.
You don't fill your brain with
mush. Only important information in this noggin.
Maurice or Morris?
I'll confess that I did not know that.
I knew it was Maurice. I wouldn't remember the rest
what's
of it.
What's the full title again? It's a beauty.
Maurice, I reckon. Joseph Micklewhite Jr.
What a classic.
Micklewhite is fun.
Maurice MJ, Micklewhite. MJ.
Yeah, that's good.
Hello, my name is Maurice Micklewhite something Junior.
Great fact. Thanks, Jamie Griffiths. The next Great one fact. Comes from Tessa Chilcott, who's given herself the title of Assistant to the Undersecretary of the Secretary of Secretaries.
Oh, an important job.
And Tessa has offered us a fact which reads, Victoria's first act on becoming queen was to ask for an hour alone. Oh, I love that. That's so good.
God, gotta take some me time.
18-year-old Victoria had been raised under the strict Kensington system, which kept her sheltered, isolated, and controlled. She was accompanied everywhere by governesses and slept in the same room as her mother until the day she became queen. It's according to historypress.uk.
Was she already married?
Or History Press UK. I'm not sure.
No, she was, wasn't she?
She was very young.
She was 18,
she in
apparently?
Africa with...
That's Queen Elizabeth. Second, this is Victoria.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, no, I'm sure of it.
I'm sure I saw the crown.
I'm sure I saw the crown. She was in Africa, she was.
Victoria, my apologies. I hope they take the crown back. I don't know, they're not going to do another... They're doing one more season or something? I'd love them to reboot it.
Bit of Victoria.
Yeah. I know there are already seasons about some of that.
That's a cool fact. She'd never been alone and she went,
That's amazing.
Now I'm in the top job. Everyone will do what I say. I'd like to be alone for an hour.
It's a great use of it. And wow. Tessa writes, can't blame her for an hour alone. She was 18 when she became queen, not an hour alone until she was 18.
Wow. Imagine that. She must've done the most horrific fart.
As soon as they all left. She'd hold it in that whole time.
Oh my God. Oh
Just
my God.
Really let it rip.
Which, makes more sense based on Tessa's emoji that she used there. That's definitely I'm holding in a fart.
Two vomiting faces.
Yeah.
Or holding in vomit.
Thank you so much for that great fact, Tessa. The next one comes from Vincenzo Giovanni Bonadonna. Oof,
I always look forward to that name.
And Vincenzo's title is The Mandela Man, because I enjoy making them. Check out my Insta at Vinny's_Mandalas. What's a Mandela?
It's like I don't know how to explain it. It's like a very intricate sort of...
I love how he worked a plug into his title.
Yeah, very
really,
good.
Really good stuff. I don't know what it is either.
I know what they are, I just don't know how to describe them.
Can you give us a broad thing?
Like an intricate sound? Drawing kind of thing.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So Vincenzo's quote is, I hate it when people say I'm lollygagging when I'm clearly dilly-dallying.
Oh, that's a good quote.
Oh, they're fun. That's fun illustrations. He said, I saw this as a tweet. Very funny stuff.
That is good. Now I'm on the great man's Instagram. And
That's not a good review.
Sorry, it's asked me to log in. I can't remember my password. That's what's happening over here. Really good stuff. Really intricate.
Yeah.
Great work, because I wasn't sure what a Mandela was. So you've educated me.
Yeah, I thought it might have been Nelson related, but that's a different kind of
No, these are really great.
Mm.
Good stuff.
All right. Cheers, Vincenzo. And finally, from Derek Brigham, who has given himself the title of Ambassador to All the Dogs.
Oh, that's a big and important job.
Love him.
Derek has offered us a fact, which is, in popular culture, the term going critical is often used in a sense of things going wrong. However, this is not the case in regards to nuclear reactors. Nuclear. Did I sound that right? People used to always make fun of George W. Bush for how he said it.
Mm.
And I'm like, yeah.
Yes, it's always.
It's funny, isn't it how he
said
it? It
fucks me over because now I think of that.
Because he might have said nuclear.
Nuclear,
right. So nuclear is all right? Or nuclear? Nuclear? Oh, no.
Nuclear.
Nuclear.
But he said nuclear.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And then Homer also says that too. Nuclear. It's pronounced nuclear.
Anyway, sorry, Derek, to get sidetracked there. Critically is reached when the nuclear reaction is self-sustaining. So in other words, going critical is turning the thing on. It's when the reactor goes supercritical that you're in trouble. Which we probably heard about in a previous report.
Yeah, I think I tried to explain how those reactions work. Maybe I didn't do a good job.
Well, it certainly didn't stick in my head. But that, I think that makes, I think Derek is really
Yeah, it's when the chain reaction gets out of control and you can't slow it down.
Yes. Awesome. Cheers, Derek. That was maybe on the one where the guy kept it open with a screwdriver.
Yes, the Demon Core.
Demon Core.
And then also a bit on the Chernobyl episode too.
Well, that brings us to the time where we thank a few of our other great supporters. Justin comes up with a little game with something to do with the episode topic.
Can we name their vaudeville show?
Yeah,
something
great.
Good, something sad.
Okay, fantastic. Love maybe? It. Yeah, I think that's...
Or their incredibly long song title.
Yeah. Yeah, I reckon that's fun. Very, incredibly long song title is great.
We can do like one word each.
All right, I'm looking forward to it. What was that noise?
No, I'm excited.
I think Jess has gone super critical. Okay, so if I may kick us off, I would love to thank from Bars Scrub in Queensland, Australia, Matt Stafford.
Okay.
Really long song. So what's the example song?
Oh, why did they dig Mars' grave so deep, Little Nelly?
All right, so probably a few words each. I'll say
I think in three each.
Dear Lily Pell, man.
A few words each?
Yeah, yeah. Dear Miss Daisy.
Why'd you leave?
Eat my lunch.
That's a beautiful lament. Beautiful lament. Is that a bracket?
Yeah. In brackets. Eat my lunch.
Thank you, Matt. I'd also love to thank from Heathfield in Essex in Great Britain, George Moody. I look to the sky and feel sadness.
Oh, my God. It's so many words.
Oh, my God.
Dave, you go.
But then I fell down a well.
Eat my dinner.
Beautiful.
We're doing a trilogy here?
Yeah. I look to the sky, see sadness, but then I trip down a well, eat my dinner.
They seem to like connect slightly from one to two, and then three takes a real left-hand turn.
Hey, we don't make the rules. This is just how songs went.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Oh, who the fuck was Little Nelly?
Finally, I'd love to thank from Dayton, Ohio in the United States, Lee Agner, or Agni. Up in my house attic.
Fucking hell.
I like to eat spiders.
Don't tell mum.
That's great.
A beautiful song.
Oh, classic Ohioan tune.
Yes.
I love beautiful, just lovely.
Don't tell mum. Can I thank a few people?
Yes, please.
I would like to thank from what I believe is Germany, from Lemgo, it is Frederick Heinen.
Frederick Heinen.
Okay. So do I kick this off?
Yeah, go on.
Tying up my shoe.
Feeling a deep sadness.
Don't tell mum.
Yeah, mum's frail. We want to protect her.
Yeah, I don't want to. It's hard to be vulnerable.
I don't want to know that we're having bad thoughts. We'll protect mum.
What is happening?
Frederick Heinen. Love that. Thank you so much. I would like to thank now from Croydon Hills in Victoria, it's Claire Hesselmans. Hesselmans. Knock, knock, knock. Someone's at the door.
I'm caught in a sack.
Where are my keys?
Plenty of problems there.
One, what a bad day.
One, you're stuck in the sack. Two, even if you're out of the sack, you don't have your keys to open the door to let someone in.
Yes. Oh.
It's not even clear. Maybe the sack's locked as well with a key.
You know when you lose
I can't find my sack key or my
house
key. Oh,
your sack lock.
Oh, fuck.
Claire Hesselman. Having a time. I would finally like to thank from Winter Garden in Florida, it's Lauren Nasser. Okay. Things be good.
Things be great.
Things be poppin'.
That's good. Things be good. Things be poppin'. No, things be great. Things be poppin'. That sounds like...
That's a Geordie number.
That's like an encore.
Yeah.
All right, we got
everyone
time for one more.
To that one.
Things be good. Things be great. Things be poppin'. Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming out, everybody.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, fucking hell. I would love to thank some people too, if I may.
Please do.
From Salem in New Hampshire.
Ooh, is that where the witch trials are from?
That might have been Massachusetts.
Oh, Massachusetts.
A couple of Salems.
Similar sort of area, right?
Yeah, all that old
up
school
in that
region.
Northeast.
Yeah.
Vaguely.
Both called Salem. I would love to thank Dylan Hooper. Do I have to start it?
Yeah, you start it.
Sometimes at night.
Oh, I drink the candle.
The lion roars.
That's their tummy being like, what the fuck?
They call their tummy the lion.
Don't drink candles.
I would also love to thank from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Dempsey Tapley. Oh, fuck, it's me again. I'm looking around. Damn it! I have a thirst.
Pass the beef.
There are scratch marks from inside the coffin.
I have a thirst. Pass the beef. There are scratch marks from inside the coffin.
Oh, that's lovely.
My goodness.
It's more of a like a metal track, I'm imagining. And finally, I would love to thank, not that I want this to end, I would love to thank from Toomall or Toomball in Texas, Alan Peach.
Alan Peach, great name.
This fruit has a stone.
Feeling fruity.
Suitin.
Suitin. It's the most gibberish one of all.
Suitin.
It's so fun. I'm feeling pretty locked and loaded before you said fruit.
So what we recap that one? This fruit has a stone.
Stone, feeling fruit and fruity. Suitin. I think Alan's having a breakdown.
Is that what that's what he says when he's putting on a suit? Yeah. Or wearing a suit?
I'm suitin'.
Suitin.
Okay. Yeah, we did. We lost a little bit there.
That was really fun.
That was a true segment for the true believers.
True believers.
No, not even
first time listeners will be going, what the fuck is going on?
That was for us.
Yeah.
Nobody else enjoyed that.
And the other thing, the final thing we like to do is thank a few of our great long-term supporters, and we welcome them into the Triptych Club. The way you get involved in this is being a subscriber or a supporter on the shout-out level or above for 3 years straight, and then you get inducted into the Triptych Club, which exists both in our hearts. And Jess, where is the physical location this week?
It is in Salem.
Salem.
But you have to figure out which one.
And you only, the real inductees find out.
Yeah.
To be involved in this, you give us, what do? You sign up on the Sydney Scheinberg. No. I forgot what we're talking about. It's the shout out level above. You're on there for 3 months, then 3 years. So you get him to stay on board for 3 years, then what happens is, I'm standing at the door, I got the list. This week we've got, it looks like, 7 inductees. I'm on the door, I'll read out your name, open the velvet rope, you jump in, Jess is there greeting you with a tray of new cocktails she's come up with related to the show. Dave's booked a band. Who's the band this week, Dave?
We actually have the Cherry Sisters.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
And Warren.
But don't worry. But we've got the chicken wire up.
Yeah,
we must.
So feel free to bring a cabbage or two, make sure the rocks are no bigger than 2 inches.
Feel free to buy all the produce in all of New York City and bring it down.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And Jess, do you have some sort of a cocktail?
Yeah, we're having cherry cocktails.
Ooh.
What's cherry in...
Is it a cherry liqueur?
Surely,
probably?
Yeah.
What is that? What's a Chambord or something?
Chambord. Is that cherry?
Chambord, isn't it? Yeah.
Is that cherry?
That's what you put in a jam donut shot, right? Chambord.
Oh, fuck, it's so yum.
Oh, Chambord.
It's not cherry, is it?
Raspberry. Sorry, everyone.
But we've got plenty of cherry stuff. We've got cherry ripes, cherry pie, Suiting. yeah, heaps of stuff. Come on down.
Holy shit. I've just seen one of the places someone's from. You're going to love it. All right, so are you ready? So the way this works is I shout them out. I welcome you in. You run in. All the previous inductees are lining up either side, slow clapping. Dave's on the mic. He revs you up, then Jess, because it takes a lot for Dave to rev someone up. Jess then boosts up Dave with a little support from the side. Here we go. So first up, from Address Unknown, it's Will Ross.
Ooh, where there's a Will, there's a Ross.
Yes.
From Wellard in Western Australia, it's Kate McGilvray.
Ooh, Kate, McGilvray, that's a good time.
Yes.
From San Diego in California in the United States, it's Janet Allendorf.
Ooh, welcome to Planet Allendorf.
Oh, yes.
Yes, 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 yes.
How about this one from Cedar Rapids in Iowa?
Yes!
It's Devin Bruns.
Ooh, Cedar rapidly into our hearts,
yes.
Devin. How cool is that?
That's
great. Really cool.
From Denver in Colorado in the United States, it's Maverick Valdez.
Ooh, we got ourselves a Maverick here tonight.
My God.
From Austin, Texas, stay weird. In the United States, it's Tim LaFuente.
Ooh, LaFuente. We're going to have a good time with that. Yeah.
And finally, from Brighton in Essex in Great Britain, it's William Hughes.
Oh, we're going to have this guy's real Brighton.
Yes.
Smart, bright.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode. Dave, you want to boot this baby home? Thank you so much before we go to William, Tim, Maverick, Devin, Janet, Kate and Will. Maybe that's got to be up there with some of the best crop of names we've ever had.
Yeah,
some of them were good. So good. I couldn't even do anything with them. It was just the name just spoke for itself.
Back to back, Maverick Valdez and Tim LaFuente.
Oh, incredible.
Oof.
Not forgetting Janet Allendorf, Devin Bruns, Kate McGilvray, Will Ross, William Hughes.
Yeah. Sorry, William.
Nah, just Hughesy.
He's really bright on.
Home of Nick Cave. Well, that does bring us to the end of the episode. Dave, you want to boot this baby home?
Thank you so much for listening. As always, you can get in contact with us at dogoonpod.com, where you can find links to the aforementioned Patreon, where you can support the show. We've got merchandise that also supports the show, and you can get to rock some sweet threads while you're doing that. You can check out our gig listing as well as, just get in contact with us at dogoonpod on all the social medias. We're on YouTubes. We're investigating TikToks. We're doing it all. Living large. But until next time, we'll say thank you so much for listening and goodbye!
Later.
Bye!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.